Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. I'm Austin Chadwick, and this is Chris Lucian, and we are really excited to have Lynn Langett with us today.
Hello.
And to kind of get us started, tell us a little bit about yourself, Lynn.
Yeah. Sure. I'm an independent cloud architect and developer. I live in Southern California, but I have clients all over the world, so I do a whole bunch of remote work.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. So we had a Kanban board of topics up here. We have learning environment, remote work, cross-discipline, collaboration. Anything you'd like to tackle first to talk about today?
Well, let me start with the remote work, because people will all ask me about how do you actually get work done with people in all these time zones. And I mean, just as an example, I've been doing one of my projects, all these things are part-time, is with a group in Sydney, Australia. And Australia is really difficult because it's a different day. You know what I mean? It's
yes.
A different time, it's a different day. You're gonna hear a lot about this during this talk today, but it starts with tools. So I use time tools, right?
Yeah.
So on my desktop, I have, you know, those clocks so you can see, okay, oh, Sydney's awake, yay, call them, or, you know, do some synchronous communication with them. Yeah. And one of the techniques that I've used, and it's unusual for people outside the US, is I will adjust my time so that people in other places don't have to stay up, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning
strange
or whatever.
Hours
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's an important way of establishing rapport.
Mm-hmm.
Like one time, for example, I did a presentation to a user group in India, and it was 2 a.m. my time. And they said they had never, ever had that. And it really sets a tone of respect for people and people's
Absolutely.
Energy levels and stuff like that. So I just try as much as I can, and you know, I can't work 24 hours a day to match when I work to when people in the other time zones will work, and be really, really flexible about it.
So with the time tools, do you get notifications or something when this happens, or how do you?
I'm not that. I should write an app. That's what I should do. I should machine learn when I actually work, and then I should have a little predictive thing that says now would be a good time to work.
Yeah,
but
No,
I kind of do it the old-fashioned way. I just look at the tool
good.
And go, they're awake.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, he wants to automate everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my
yeah.
That's my whole thing. But, I work with a few people in Australia now, and it's. It has been interesting because it's like, okay, meeting at the end of the day, I usually come in early so I can leave early, but those days I need to go in, you know, a little bit later to leave later and
right.
things like that. But you're right. It's a sign of respect, right? To be able to meet somebody on their own timeline.
Yeah. I mean, what I really see predominantly is that people outside the U.S. are expected to be on U.S. time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can adjust yourself, then you automatically sort of get extra positivity in the communication. And, you know, that's how we want to work.
Yeah.
Right?
And
yes.
then that helps with the collaboration
mm-hmm.
because people know that they're respected, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
Very cool.
Have you done any remote pairing or mobbing?
Yeah, all the time. The majority of my collaborative coding, and I'm picky about words, so I tend to say collaborative coding, because that to me is inclusive of pairing or mobbing,
mm-hmm.
Is done remotely, like 90% of it.
Okay.
So I'm very rarely in the room because, you know, it takes 14 hours to fly to Australia
yeah.
or 10 hours to fly to Europe. You know, we need Elon Musk to address this with his rocket plane. That's
yeah.
what I really need. But until then, you know.
I know.
until then, I do a lot of remote pairing and mobbing. And
yeah.
again, it's tools.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been using that I really like is I use a lot of VS Code
mm-hmm.
because I'm using so many different languages and I really like the plugins.
Yeah.
And there's a plugin called LiveShare
mm-hmm.
that I discovered when I was working with a new language team, the Ballerina language team, and they're in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is scenario, right? The thing that was cool about it is Ballerina is like a glue sort of language. So it's a higher level language that'll generate DevOps code, like YAML code.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so Ballerina as a language is designed to be able to write strongly typed
mm-hmm.
Code that will generate like REST API wrappers.
Nice.
And so live share tools allow you to share not only the workspace, but to share a server,
mm-hmm.
which was super cool.
Yeah.
So the thing that was neat about it is to be able to work in the editor
mm-hmm.
and have all these different shared environments for a particular scenario.
Yeah.
And I think that's like kind of a trend I see in dev tools. More and more of these collaborative tools, whether they're add-ins or whether they, you can collaborate, like put everything in Slack. So, you know, when you push, then you get the Slack notification or whatever.
Is that like a server hosting an IDE that then multiple people can log into, but everybody's remote, not just the person?
So for VS Code LiveShare.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, okay. Yeah. So they have, and they're integrating, they have a chat, a voice chat, so you don't have to open Skype. Yeah. It's super cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
They keep on adding features. So you have the shared, like a Google Docs sort of coding space.
Yeah.
You can have the shared terminal so you can, compile it. Then you can have the shared server, so if you're doing REST endpoints, and then you have chat.
Yeah.
And I think there's more stuff, but those are the features that I use.
Every time I've done some sort of remote mobbing or remote pairing, it's been a little awkward because it's like usually, okay, you type because I don't like the lag between my computer and yours, and you don't have a lag, right?
Right.
And so I think one thing that we were talking about with Willem is like having a person, having a look at their screen, mm-hmm. right? And again, creating that sense of equality, right? And so if you have, I talk a lot about this lately, is a prolonged sense of inequality. You have to step in and do something about it. And so if you can't avoid, if you have one person that has a better setup, it's nice to balance them all out and just and share the pain a little bit so that you can all get through it together.
The other thing with this idea of remote pairing with tools, I actually do courses on LinkedIn Learning and about various cloud topics and things like that, but I made a course called Collaborative Coding.
Yeah.
And we actually used all their production capability and showed what it looked like. So it was like 7 different screens because we showed us, we showed the remote person, we showed their screens, because people have a hard time visualizing what this will look like. And so, you know, in addition to talking about the process of collaborative coding, we like basically made a TV show showing it, which was kind of fun. Awesome.
Yeah. So you're a TV star, is what you're saying? Oh,
wow. I don't know about that. Get better TV.
So we're approaching our time box on this topic. So do you want to, we can move on to one of the other two, learning environment or cross-disciplinary collaboration?
Sure. Let's do a cross-disciplinary collaboration. Okay. So one of the things that I've been doing is I've been really working in some new to me domains over the past couple of years. I've been being a developer and a cloud architect for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. But I decided about 3 years ago, because a friend of mine got cancer and she wasn't able to get a personalized treatment, and just some stuff I knew from some students that I was knowing, they were telling me that the cloud was new to a lot of researchers, that I wanted to focus my production work on collaborating with bioinformatics researchers to help support you know, research for individualized cancer treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot to learn. I don't even know what, you know, genomic sequencing was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like a forced uptick in collaboration, because I couldn't even talk to them until I had some idea. Now, fast forward to now, and earlier this month, I was working with one of my clients, the Broad Institute at MIT and Harvard, and they do some of the highest volume of sequencing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go and see high volume sequencing in action. So I got to hold a flow cell. I got to see the Illumina sequencers. And it really matters, you know, in all domains.
Yeah.
But the more, I don't know, I guess, scientific, the more jargon that there is to learn, if you can actually see the process I've found, you can collaborate more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the kind of the reverse of that is I want the researchers to come sit with my mob and try to understand our perspective of trying to make their research analysis go faster and our challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys do that at work all the time too.
Pull in the product owner and work with them. A lot of our, in our case, a lot of other disciplines throughout the business will have, you know, we've mobbed with the finance department, we've mobbed with the IS department, different marketing components, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I've had other clients in SoCal, they do like Snapchat remonetizers, and so they have big social media data sets, and they've had really huge cloud bills because they were overfunded startups, really. And so they didn't have any discipline. So I've mobbed with finance people too, to help them to understand, like, this is where the source of your spend is coming from. And that's very non-traditional, right? Bringing the finance person in and like, okay, you have 57 EC2 instances that haven't been touched in a month. Perhaps we should turn those off.
Killing funding.
And then, I mean, I send that to really, like, I just like collaborating on projects that I'm really interested in with really anyone. I mean, I'm doing a lot of work right now with college students, because my daughter happens to be a college student, and so I have access to a lot of students. So I've been remote mobbing with students from Stanford, Harvard, Berkeley, UW, UT at Austin, and I really like their energy, because those 20-somethings that have just learned just enough to ask you those questions. And you guys have interns where you work, and they push you, right?
Yeah.
They might not really know
anything.
They want
to do something very different.
Always. Right, exactly. And they don't really know limits.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, well, why can't I do it, right? Yeah. And I have found that we've been able to build some really innovative things that, frankly, I didn't think we could build as fast as we did. So they were right. Good for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, nice. Nice.
Absolutely.
So my sort of feeling is collaboration is around interest and energy and a willingness to learn and not really so much around skills. And, and I think you guys would agree.
It's a learning environment. So I'm, you know, everything that we do, once we learn it, a lot of the times we just automate it, right? And so the speed of the learning is one of the key factors of your speed of progress, because, in some other disciplines, you might learn something and you might use it over and over again for a very long time. In software and especially in machine learning, it's like you learn it a few times, maybe, and then, or, you know, you might have to relearn it once or twice, but then by the time, the second time, you're like, okay, I'm going to make a CLI for this, I'm going to just hit a button, and it's going to generate it all for me. And so, it's, you know, this is definitely, you know, a field where you have to learn all the time, or you stagnate, and you fall behind. And so, because usually everything that gets learned gets automated in some way very quickly.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I think what comes to mind is often when you talk with people about, you're in a technical field, you just code alone kind of thing, and then I start explaining mobbing to them, or even if you're not doing collaborative type coding processes, the hardest part of a technical job is the people stuff, right?
And so, always.
So what?
Always.
Yeah.
Yep.
Always,
yes.
Said the consultant. Always.
And so, like what you said, where you look for people with high energy and then you do these collaborative style coding or collaborative things with them. And so if you find the people with the right attitude, the learning can just happen much more easily, right? As opposed to someone who maybe has it all but, you know, isn't into collaborating. Like, how's your experiences been inviting people to collaborate? How has it gone? Yeah.
Well, it's like anything else in life.
Yeah.
I mean, you have sort of like a spectrum of how people want to work, right?
Yeah.
And I'm an introvert, okay? So I got brought into the world of collaborative coding very much like I was dragged.
Yes, yeah.
And so I was like, this is stupid. I don't want to do it. And I was wrong, okay? I was wrong, okay? But the situation for me is you're people first, technologist second. And so, you know, as I started and when I talked about being on the right time zone and everything like that, you can't always be happy. Okay, that's just life. You're gonna have good days and down days, but you're people first.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to say, hi, how's your day?
Yeah.
Not fix this bug,
right?
And
put a ticket in there for you, go read it.
Exactly. And if somebody, you know, seems like, you know, they're not able to do it, then they should do something else. You know, it's really important to make technology a people-focused business. I think it's actually something that our industry needs to continue to work on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we can contribute to a little bit to that effort as we go.
Yeah,
definitely.
So that sounds like a good point to break from that topic and talk a lot more about learning environments. We kind of segued automatically.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything more to say more deeply on the learning environment side of things?
Yeah, I mean, I really have to say that it really is in a workplace, like an enterprise workplace rather than a startup. It's really a discipline. Like, do you do tests? Do you check in regularly? Learning is a discipline. It's an activity. It's not, you know, a nice to have kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I have to give you guys some props because I worked with you guys a couple years ago, and I actually use a lot of the way the environment was run as a model. Uh-huh. The fact that you guys have learning, you know, time every single day. Mm-hmm. You have learning time that's self-directed. You have learning time that where people can go outside the environment, go to conferences. You've worked really hard to build a learning environment, and it shows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, when we were there earlier today, there was a team that didn't know me, that had learned something new. They had built something with Unity, and, you know, that you celebrate when you can build something because that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're coders, right?
Yeah.
So this idea is to pick things that you enjoy, that you care about, and then self-direct the learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no easy trick. I mean, in my perspective as a consultant, more companies than not do not have learning environments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they just, it's sort of, they don't understand that it's a discipline or part of the, what the work environment should be. They just say, why aren't you learning? Why don't you want to go to a conference? Why aren't you? Nah.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not seen as work time.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if it is a work activity, learning is a work activity, and it is, you know, time is allotted and there are, you know, there's visibility around it and there's celebrating around it, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But there has to be effort around it or it's not going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, I really see a lot of that situation in the environment that you guys work in.
Yeah. We appreciate that. And I think that's a big thing is protecting that, like holding
mm-hmm.
space
mm-hmm.
for things like that is extremely important. And this is the thing is companies that aren't doing it, it's hard to communicate like what the financial impact of that
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
ultimately, right? It's the
yeah.
side effects of the side effects.
Right.
And you know, I've been in environments where there was no learning and it was essentially a death march to a stopped project or
yep.
a stalled project.
Yep.
And I think, you know, it's probably even in the greater majority of actual software development cases out there. And so a lot of companies might be like, we want to be agile and we want to unit test and we want to do all this great stuff, but then they don't let anybody learn it. And then everything just falls flat on its face. Right. And so, yeah, I'm very passionate about the learning side of things as well.
Yeah, definitely. So coming from an environment where there is a lot of learning, and then you've been collaborating with a ton of different people and companies and things, you know, how, I guess my question is, how have you tried to inspire places you've been to have that kind of learning?
Mm-hmm. Well, my work has evolved. I've always been on the teaching side. Like I was a tech instructor
mm-hmm.
way back in the .com time and all that. That's kind of, actually I weirdly started as an instructor and then got more into implementation when people asked me to help them build things, and I always felt like such an imposter. It was sort of weird because, and I had a little kid at that time, so
mm-hmm.
I was like the anti-consultant. I was like, I only know this one thing. Is that one thing you need? Okay, 1 hour of consulting, and people would be like, what? Don't you want a, you know, like full-time job? I'm like, no, I only have 1 hour. And so I would, you know, the minimum viable thing,
yeah.
that was like my life, right?
Yeah.
Because that's all I had. And so I was like a reverse. So my entry into tech came first through learning. So now, I actually wrote a Medium blog post about this. People are like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I said, I call it learn, build, teach.
Wow.
And that's mm-hmm. basically
nice.
My life.
Yeah.
Where I have, in my consultancy, I allocate time for learning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different way than an enterprise because I'm independent. But I literally put it on my calendar.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I build. And I might build just for fun. I might build for clients. I might build for, you know, whatever. And then I teach about it. And
mm-hmm.
so that's the inspire part. Part of it is I'm not, you know, a spring chicken. You know, I'm like over the 5-0. I said it over the 5-0, right? Yeah. And so I go on keynote stages and I talk about the fact that I learned, you know, differential equations when I was 51 from Khan Academy because I needed them to understand TensorFlow. Mm. And I try to embody the fact that lifelong learning is something that you can do, right? Like I don't buy off on that. I'm too old. I'm too female. I'm too young. I'm too inexperienced. I'm too rich. I'm too poor. Whatever to learn. Right. That's crap. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to learn something, learn it.
Yeah. And
just brilliant.
it might be even safe to venture to say lifelong learning is not only a fact, it's becoming required,
yeah,
right? Like
totally.
Gradually over time, it's, yeah, just the old way of doing things is kind of leaving, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, just in the time I've been working in the 15, 20 years, I wrote books about data warehousing. That doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like, you know, which NoSQL database do you want to,
yeah,
use, right?
Absolutely.
Like, it was sad when I had my 500-page book on SQL Server OLAP, and I was like, that technology is no more. I'm so sad. You know, you take a minute, you know, you go through the seven stages of, you,
yeah,
know, the denial, acceptance,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
and then you're like, okay, what's next, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
now, you know, I'm building, like, Hadoop Spark data pipelines on the cloud,
yeah,
and you know, there's always something.
And all that stuff's gonna be gone in a couple of years anyway.
I know. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
It evolves quick. It evolves very quickly. But this is why I like the field so much, right?
For sure.
It's, I don't think I could be content if I wasn't sitting there and digging deeply into some topic that I was really interested in all the time, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a good check on learning and on, like, technology. Sometimes you get really hung up on a technology. I think it was Martin Fowler's blog post on design stamina hypothesis, but he said everyone likes to think the new system they're making is, like, the next and greatest thing, but it's really just in 5 years from now it's the legacy code system that someone else is dealing with, right?
So,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you're just making someone's future legacy system, you know, so.
Well, to that point though too, another thing about learning,
yeah,
is rather than just new shiny, learning is also learning about the history. So
yes,
you can learn,
yeah,
from the history.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing research into papers and into what came before and into, it could be strange academic systems, but, you know, there's not really the new. There is the add on to the existing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this just comes with time because you,
yeah,
realize you're not going to, you know, invent something totally new. But it is something I find myself talking to a lot of people about in terms of learning.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to build on?
Sure.
Instead of what are you going to build?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, that's the same thing from innovation or, like, even,
yeah,
divergence of patents, right? Mm-hmm. I was talking to a team just the other day about software being a temporal entity, and you weren't the first one to work on this code base.
Exactly.
You're not going to be the last one that's going to be working on this code base. So how do we make a product or a project or a piece of software, how do we make that temporally safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make it so that over time it can exist, you know, as a four-dimensional being, I guess, right? if you go to string theory. and now we're getting nerdy. But yeah, no, that's a really great insight.
Because it's like you're leaving, you want it to not be like this hunt and peck archaeological find. You want the code, you want the pipeline,
mm-hmm,
to speak to the future readers,
mm-hmm,
about what it's doing, right? And,
mm-hmm,
so that they can read the history of the system and learn from it easily as opposed to... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean that's a great,
yeah,
point is right. So a requirement is continuous learning. Probably a requirement also is continuous teaching, and,
yeah,
and automated teaching, right? I just had to throw that in there. But it's true. You need ways to bring that. So we're approaching our time box. We have a couple minutes. Anything else you want to bring attention to, say, or talk about?
Yep. So I am starting to work on a book. And the book tentative title is Visualizing Data Pipelines.
Awesome.
So I've been very obsessed with this idea of picturing software and picturing distributed cloud-based systems,
mm-hmm,
picturing distributed cloud-based dynamic systems over time, right?
Yeah.
So it goes to your archaeological comments,
yeah,
of, will a picture be more universally understandable and making live pictures? I've been inspired by a lot of work done in this field. Brett Victor, for example, Alan Kay. And I don't know. You know, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years. I'm going to give some talks in Europe on it, which is a forcing function, because then I have to. But this whole idea, so I just want to say to the audience, if you're interested in this idea of picturing dynamic distributed systems, reach out to me, because I'm interested in collaborating, maybe building some tools. I've got some stuff with D3 I'm playing around with. And I just think that the industry will benefit if we can create some picture tools on top, because distributed systems are hard.
Absolutely. Well, I think that you know, that's something that I think I could benefit from. So it's really
we're gonna code. Are you committing?
there's some like off hours, you know, open source mobbing happens every once in a while. But that reminds me a little bit. There was a visualizer that I saw for SVN a long time ago that would turn your SVN repository into a 3D model that was little, and each developer was a little spaceship. Mm-hmm. Every time they deleted code, things would explode and go away, and everything they added but you could watch it as a video in the end, right? And so that would be amazing to have as a cloud tool.
Right?
Yeah.
There's all kinds of possibilities. The Broad actually has an artist in residence to just walk around and get a feel for all the work that's happening and to try to visually represent it, because the work is so complex and so difficult to communicate. And that was, again, another impetus for this idea about visualizing cloud systems. It's work that's going to take a while. So again, I'm appealing to the audience. Help me.
Yes.
I have some ideas. Which is,
I don't know what you guys are talking about. A 5,000 microservice system is just obvious to me.
Right.
I
don't think
I
need to picture. Right. You can just read that YAML code. You're good.
I'm good. I don't know what the need is. All right. So I guess we'll close it out.
Yeah.
You guys ready for
Thank
close?
Thank you very much for being on this.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Really great.
Definitely a lot of fun. So reach out to us on YouTube and Twitter, Mob Mentality. You're on Twitter as well. Any other ways to get a hold of you?
I always say, if you can't find me, you're not looking. Dang it.
Nice. Yes, and so like and subscribe.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good one.
Bye.